Okay, we're doing Pirkei Avot with the Rambam's commentary, and we are up to the second chapter of the first Mishnah. Perek Bet Mishnah Aleph. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, who is also known as Rabbi, he says, "Eizo yiderech yishara sheyavo la'adam." Second Perek, Perek Sheni, Perek Beis, page Lamed Vav in the Rambam La'am editions, page Reish Ayin Hey in Rav Kapach's edition, Perek Mishnayot. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi says, "Eizo hi derech yishara sheyavo lo adam." What is the straight path that a person should choose for himself? Kol sheitiver loseach. Whatever path is glorious for he who performs it, v'tiver lo min adam, and it is a glory for him among mankind, from the midst of mankind. We'll have to explain what these two sentences mean, guys. Why don't you look in with other people? And be careful with a light mitzvah as you are with a weighty mitzvah. For you do not know what wages will be given for the mitzvot. And calculate the loss of a mitzvah against its wages. And the wages of an avera against its loss. Look with intent at three things, and you won't come to the hands of sin. Da, you should know. Ma lemala mimcha, what's above you? Ayin roa, an eye that sees. Vozen shomat, and an ear that hears. Vechol maasecha, and all of your actions. Vasefer nichtavin, are written in the book. Wow, exactly our topic now. Coming up, Rosh Hashanah, written in the book. Says the Rambam. Let's see. Baruhu ki derech yishara. It is clear that when Rebbe tells us to choose a straight path, Hema Maasim HaTovim, that's a reference to the good actions, Ashal Be'anu B'Perek Avi, that we explained in the fourth chapter. Vehema Maasim HaMemutza'im, and that is a reference to the balanced actions, the things that are the golden path, the Rambam's famous middle path, those are the perfect straight actions, the perfect straight path that one should go on. Lefishib, the Rambam's commentary on the bottom. But I have a different translation, probably. Again, Baruch Hu Ki Derech Yisharayim HaMaasim HaTovim Shabiyanu BaPerek Arvi. It is clear that when Rebbe said Derech Yishara, straight path, he was referring to the good actions that the Rambam had enumerated in his fourth chapter in the introduction to Pirkei Avos. Vehema maasim hamutzaim, and these are the things that are balanced, that are in the middle. Lefi shebehem niknet l'adam benafshot chuna na'ala, because through these actions, a person can acquire for his nefesh an elevated trait. V'teitav hitnaguto im bnei adam, and then his behavior with mankind will be good. And that's why Rebbe said, if you've gotten on that straight path, the middle path, tiferet leosea, it is a glory for the one who performs it, v'tiferet lo min adam, and it's glorious among mankind. If people come to you and you're running the middle path, that means when they ask you for a loan and you could afford it, you'll say yes, and when you can't afford it, you'll say no. They'll look at you fondly. Yeah. The one who does it, oseha, he who does it. Hoseh is does, Hoseh ha, does it. Does that, the things that that path dictates to do. So what does that path dictate to do? The Rambam explained the middle path. The middle path is that you're not too stingy and you're not too giving. What?
And refers to
the person who does it? That refers to the person?
The person
who does that path, yeah. The Hayishara. Hayishara, the straight path. Your point is good. The Rambam, the terminology of the Mishnah is slightly complex, because the Mishnah begins by saying what is the path that a person should choose, and then the Mishnah says any path that is glorious to he who makes it. What do you mean makes it? I'm making the path? So we discussed in our Pshat class that maybe yes, maybe each person has to forge his own path. But now we're learning Rambam. We're not doing other Perushim. But you're right that the word Oseha is really a word that needs iyun. We need to really delve into why Rebbe used that word. He who makes it. He who makes what? V'achar kach amar, and then Rebbe said, Shera'ui li'izahir b'mitzvah shechoshvin ba she'ikala, that it is fitting that we be careful with the mitzvah that we think is light. Meaning, the Mishnah said, be careful with a light mitzvah like a weighty mitzvah. So you might say, what's a light mitzvah? So the Rambam saying, right, what Rebbe meant is a mitzvah that we think is light. Kigon, for example, Simchat HaRegel, being happy on Yom Tov. And being happy on Yom Tov, our sages say, people take it the wrong way. They go to work, they do whatever they feel like doing. Really, it's important. We have a mitzvah to be happy, to rejoice in the regel. Now, guys, Sukkot is coming up, on Sukkot especially. There are shiurim all over. In my house, usually we have a shiur every morning and every night in Sukkot. We try, especially Hoshana Rabbah. And there's a night that Natan Siegel takes the guys to Tish in Mea Shearim, that you go dance in Simchat Beit HaShoeva. You could go every night, there's Simchat Beit HaShoeva, but what's the point? You go once, you see what the idea is. Spend every night there, I don't know what the point is. But there is a point of being happy, a holy happiness in the regel. So the Rambam says one thing that people take lightly is this concept, this mitzvah of being happy in the regel. Do people remember that they have to buy their wives a gift for the regel? Do people remember that they have to buy their children some candy, something to make them happy in the regel? People have to remember this. We have to do things that will make people happy. Ul midat lashon hakodesh, says the Rambam, and learning Hebrew. Learning to talk in Hebrew, that's another mitzvah that people take lightly. And this, what does the Rambam mean by this? So it says, I'll get to you guys in a minute. It says in the Sifri, V'dibarta bom, we say in the Parsha of Shema, in Parsha Seikev, in the Parsha of Vehoyim Shemoah, we say, V'dibarta bom, you will talk in them in the words of Torah. So the Sifri says, from here we derive that when a person's child is born, he should talk to him in Lashon HaKodesh. So that the child's mother tongue is Lashon HaKodesh, and he could learn the Torah as a mother tongue. And if a father does not do this with his child, says the Sifri, he'd have been better off burying him. That's what it's burying him. That's what the Sifri says. The Sifri says when one's child is born, he should talk to him Lashon HaKodesh, so that the child's mother tongue is Hebrew. So that when he approaches the Torah, that's his mother tongue. So I'm saying that this is probably where the Rambam took it from. And one of the people who quotes this also is Rav Hirsch in Chorev. When he discusses Chinuch, he says this is one of the points that people forget. So one second, let's just go in order here. Baruch, you wanted something?
No, I just want to say, is it referring to the concept in daycare whereby that in Russian says that Rakula is a hill?
Oh. Excellent. It's an excellent point. I wasn't planning on touching on that, but once you bring it up, we will. The Torah tells us, "Vaya ekev tishmeun." It will be ekev, which can mean a heel. Ekev could mean as a result. The result of the fact that you listen to my mitzvot, then I will give you all these wonderful things. Rashi in his commentary over there says, what does it mean as a result of the fact that you will keep my mitzvot? The reason the Torah used the word ekev is to tell us mitzvot she'adam dash ba'kevo, mitzvot that a person threshes with his heel. What do you do when you thresh? You take the kernel, you leave the chaff. So people sometimes do the same thing with mitzvot. They decide this is the kernel, and the other things they're like the chaff. I'll leave them on the side. There are mitzvot that people tend to stomp on with their heel. So the Torah tells us, no, you have to be careful with every mitzvah. You can't just leave some mitzvahs on the side and say, those are like the chaff. So over there, on that Rashi, there's a Ma'arik. The Ma'arik was a Rishon, a late Rishon. And he writes in his commentary, Kigon, for example, Dibur Lashon HaKodesh V'Simchat HaRegel. Speaking Lashon HaKodesh, the same example as the Rambam gave, which makes me wonder if maybe they had a Tanoic source or an Amoraic source for this concept, because otherwise, why did they both choose these two examples? And Dibur Lashon HaKodesh, we don't usually encounter it as being a mitzvah. And here, the Rambam wrote in Arabic, and some translate the Rambam as learning to speak Lashon HaKodesh, and some translate it as speaking Lashon HaKodesh. So this deserves its own discussion, is our Hebrew Lashon HaKodesh. That, if you want a question and answer, we'll get to that, but let's go in order here. Yeah, Daniel.
In chronological order from the last thing you said to the first thing, we're going to make a big effort that our children speak in good Hebrew, but that's one of the points why I wanted to speak in good Hebrew, is why I won't speak Hebrew with them, because they would learn bad Hebrew from me. And I'd rather have them learn the later Hebrew, but then they start learning Hebrew in Ghana and not at home, and learn at least good Hebrew, and like, tell me the mistakes I do. So am I, because of that, like a sinner, and you're burying my children because you don't speak Hebrew with them?
So I don't have enough clarity, halacha lemaisa, to answer you on this halacha lemaisa. Meaning, what I'm telling you is what it says in the sources, but when you're asking me halacha, what you're supposed to do with your own family, you have to ask someone who has verified this halacha, and I am not. No, this is a common question people say. If I talk to my kids English, Hebrew, they'll get in gone. They'll know it naturally. So one has to be big enough to decide whether when the Sifri said this, the Sifri meant it literally, and the Sifri said, don't tell me stories, the first language has an impact on the child, and that's the language that should be first. Or did the Sifri only mean that we should master Lashon HaKodesh, and then if I speak to them English as the first language, but they're going to be talking Hebrew all over and Gan and everything else, so then they'll know it well, and that's good enough. I'm not big enough to know what the Sifri said. This takes someone big who can really tell you my understanding, and you can rely on his understanding. I myself don't know. I try with my children, at least with my boys, that their mother tongue be Lashon HaKodesh, because the way I understand it is it's for learning Torah, and boys have a bigger chiv of Lima Torah. But at the same time, I'm very careful to talk. Once they master Lashon HaKodesh, then at home I speak English, and I try to speak English on the best level I can, so that they learn English, they learn to speak well. It's an asset. Why shouldn't the child have another language? We find Rebbe did the same thing. The same Rebbe we're learning now. His children spoke many languages because they were politicians. So, Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, his children knew how to talk other languages. That's what it says. They knew Greek. They knew the political language of the time. So today, it would be English. Maybe soon it will be Chinese. But, yeah.
We definitely know that a lot of Hasidim doesn't speak Hebrew.
So they claim that our Hebrew isn't Lashon HaKodesh. That's another discussion. They claim our Hebrew is not Lashon HaKodesh. Lashon HaKodesh is the holy tongue. In Lashon HaKodesh, Chashmal isn't the electricity. You guys say, that's what they say to us. I have a lot of Hasidish friends. They always tell me, what do you mean this isn't Lashon HaKodesh? So that deserves its own discussion. If you want, in the question and answer session, we could discuss it. There's what to say about it, but that's too much of a digression. Yeah. Chashmal is an angel. Chashmal, the prophet in Yechezkel discusses angels. One of the angels he discusses is Chashmal. There was a man by the name of Ben Yehuda. It wasn't his real name, but he was the one that really pushed the language of Hebrew as a national language. And he worked the language of Hebrew the way he thought was right. And he was an apikores. He was a very problematic person. But he really is the one that pushed for Lashon HaKodesh. So that's the question. His Hebrew is not Lashon HaKodesh, but the Hebrew we use today, what are we going to say? It was greatly impacted by him, and can we call it Lashon HaKodesh or not? It's a good question. Agvaniyot is not a tomato. It's his invention that Agvaniyot is a tomato based upon some French or Italian mythology. Yeah. The Rambam is right here, the Rambam that we're reading.
From where?
The Rambam simply says it here, Pirkei Avot, the second chapter of the first Mishnah. The Sifrei is on Parshas Ekev. Sifrei is on Devarim, Parshas Ekev, on the Pasuk of Vidibarta Bam, in Vayam Shemot. Sifrei, Samach Pei Resh Yud. Sifrei de Bei Rav, that's a Medrash Halacha, and it's on the Pasuk of Vayam Shemot, Vidibarta Bam. Ekev.
And
the Rashi is on the very beginning of Parshas Ekev, on the first pasuk in Ekev. That's different. That's Sifrei is a Medrash Halacha composed by Tanoim, composed, I think, by Rav Chia, if I'm not mistaken. Sifrei is a Medrash Halacha. And Rashi is on the first pasuk in Parshas Ekev, and the commentary on Rashi is the Maharik, Mem Hei Resh Yud Kuf. Sure. Okay. Back to the Rambam. So the Rambam said we have to be careful with the mitzvah that people think is a light mitzvah. And the Rambam gave us two examples: rejoicing, being happy in the regel, and learning Lashon HaKodesh. ובמצווה שנתבערה חומרתה, and then you have a mitzvah that it's been clarified how severe this mitzvah is, kigon, for example, Hamila, you know, the Bris Mila, God made 13 covenants with the Jewish people over the mitzvah of Bris Mila, we perform the mitzvah of Bris Mila on Shabbos for a child that was born on time. If the Mila is on time on the eighth day, then we would do a Bris on Shabbos. That tzitzit, and the mitzvah of tzitzis, is also one of the mitzvahs the Rambam says is a waiting mitzvah. V'shchitat ha-Pesach, the slaughtering, the bringing of the Korban Pesach, is one of two proactive mitzvot. Mila and Pesach are the only two mitzvot to say that the Torah says he who forgoes the performance of these mitzvot will get kares, will get cut off. Ordinarily, kares is saved for prohibitions, for lamps. The only two exceptions are Korban Pesach and Mila. So the Rambam gave us examples of what people consider to be light mitzvot and what people consider to be weighty mitzvot. V'natan tam lekach, and the Rambam said that a person should be careful with both of them. And the reason that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi gave in our Mishnah is she'en ata yodea matan secharan shel mitzvot, for you do not know what are the wages for the mitzvot. Uviyur inyan ze, an explanation of this concept, כמו שאסביר, is as I will explain. והוא, and that is. And now the Rambam is going to give us a very important introduction. And the Rambam, if you will note, really quantifies the Mishnah, and in his explanation will give us an understanding as to how we really understand which mitzvot are more weighty and which are less. So let's go with the Rambam. Let's see what he's telling us. שכל התורה, the whole Torah, ממנה מצוות עשה וממנה מצוות לא תעשה. Some of the Torah's positive commandments, some of the Torah's prohibitions. Mitzvot lo taseh, when it comes to the prohibition, harei piresha katuv ha'onesh al kol achat men zulati me'at. The Torah explains what is the punishment for each prohibition, except for a few. Ve'anash b'miktzatan mitot, some of them the punishment is the death penalty. U'b'miktzat, and some of them the punishment is karet, being cut off, dying young. Umita bidei shamayim, or death in the hands of heaven at an untimely age. Umalkut, or some of the prohibitions, the punishment is getting lashes. So we have different punishments for different prohibitions. Umina onashin, and by looking at the punishments, yadano we know, et kol mitzvot lo taseh, when all of the prohibitions we know, mamen isuro chamur, which of them are more weighty, which of them the prohibition is more severe, and which are less severe. How do we know? We look at the punishment. We say, if God said, for this you get the death penalty, and for this you get lashes, so obviously the thing that you get the death penalty for is far more severe than the thing that one would only get lashes for. So, the Rambam is telling us that when our Mishnah says, you don't know the wages for the mitzvot, the Mishnah was not talking about the prohibitions. Because the prohibitions we do know. We know at least how weighty they are based on the punishment. V'hem shmona dargot, and when it comes to the prohibition, there are really eight steps. Hadarga rishona, the first step, v'hem hachamurim shebahin, and they are the most severe of among them. Hen dvarim asher chayav v'hem skila, they are the prohibitions that one gets stoning for, which stoning is considered the worst death penalty. So that's the worst way for a person to go. They give him a little bit of something intoxicating that will make him groggy, so he's not sure what's going on. They push him off of a high roof, and then they throw a huge stone on him, and then they throw a bunch of smaller stones on him. It's the worst way to go. As I'll say, it's the worst way to go. That's the worst death penalty. So obviously the prohibitions that one gets stoning for are going to be the worst, the most severe prohibitions. The Hadargashin Matamizon, the step that's one down from this is they're those that get death penalty by burning, which doesn't mean literally burning, but it was a way of executing the person. And the third was they'd kill him by sword. And the fourth, the lowest, the most lenient death penalty was strangulation. And the fifth level in prohibitions is those that get cut off. Vashishit, and the sixth level is mchuyevei mitab de shamayim, those that get death at the hands of heaven. By the way, the Rambam just said a big chiddush. Tosus quotes different sources from the Jerusalem Talmud and the Babylonian Talmud. What exactly is karet? Is karet dying young? The Gemara seems to say that karet means one won't make it to the age beyond the age of 50. The Gemara questions, the Gemara itself seems to indicate that karet means dying young. And then there's another Gemara that seems to say there's karet and karet ariri. Karet ariri means that a person will die without children. Ariri means that a person will be childless. So the question is, does every karet include this curse of not having children, or that one's children die, or not? And that's different opinions in the Tosas. So Tosas has a question, does karet always include not having children, or that the children die or not? And what age is it? So the Rambam over here did not delineate two levels. The Rambam did not say that there's karet ariri and karet. The Rambam just said karet. So I don't know if we can derive from here that the Rambam holds that all kares is the same, or we would have to say that maybe the Rambam means that they're all on the same level, which seems a little strange, because this is two punishments and this is one. I mean, it's a little strange to say that. So it's more likely to say, if we have to quantify where the Rambam stands on this, that the Rambam seems to hold that all of Kares is the same. That's what would seem more likely. That the Rambam goes with that opinion in the Rishonim. That's what it would seem, because the Rambam... That there every Kares includes this concept that one loses one's children. That there is no delineation between Kares and Karet Ariri. That's what would seem to me more logical in the Rambam. Vashishit, so the sixth level is Mita B'dei Shamayim. Veshvit, and the seventh level, the second to last, second to most lenient prohibition is Mechuevei Malkot, is those who get lashes. Veshminit, and the eighth level, the lowest level, is Lavin Shein Lokin Alem, are prohibitions that one does not get lashes for. And this is also a big chidush, because let's say we have a concept, Lava Nitak La'aseh, if the Torah gives us a prohibition and connects it to an aseh. Torah says, don't leave over from the sacrifice to the morning. If you leave over from the sacrifice to the morning, burn over what's left. So if one left over some of the food from the sacrifice to the morning, one has transgressed the prohibition. And let's say he had witnesses who stood there and warned him, in 2 minutes at sunrise, finish that last kezias, eat that last morsel, so you don't leave something over. And he says, no, I won't. He takes it and throws it away, so he can't reach it by the time sunrise comes, by the time of Alos HaShachar. The witnesses tell him, if you do that, they tell him a second before he throws it away, if you throw it away, you will transgress a prohibition, and you really should get lashes for that prohibition. So let's say he takes it and he throws it, and he throws it to someplace that he won't be able to eat it. It'll become tamei or something. So he just cut off the aseh. He can no longer fix the prohibition he transgressed, because he will no longer be able to eat it. So then there are opinions that say he will get lashes. So here you have a prohibition that... In essence, the reason he doesn't get lashes is because he could still do the assay. But if he can't do the assay, then he will get lashes. What are you going to say? That prohibition is less because he doesn't get lashes, but sometimes he could get lashes for it. So when he did the action, the fact that the Rambam again just says in general, if you don't get lashes, must be it's a lesser prohibition. We could understand that way, but we could also understand differently. There's room to delve into this concept that the Rambam's saying that the punishment always defines the crime, the weight of the crime. There's room to say that there will be external reasons why the punishment will be different, and not necessarily the severity of the crime. But this is what the Rambam's saying. I'm just pointing out that, in my humble opinion, there's room to discuss this concept, what the Rambam's saying. We shouldn't just take and say, yeah, of course, that makes sense. Yeah, it does make sense, but there's room to discuss why exactly we would go with this logic. Yeah?
But doesn't chorus just mean cut off?
Karis means cut off. What exactly it means is a good question. I have to try and find it. About a month and a half ago, I wrote an article summarizing the shitot. There are many shitot in the Rishonim exactly what Karis is. I'll try to find it. If I find it, Bezant Shem, I'll post it. Okay, I have to find it. I looked for it 2 weeks ago and couldn't find it. I think it got deleted somehow. But if I can find it, Bezant Shem, I'll post it. It's just there are so many shitot that it'll take too long to go into. There are some that seem to say what you're saying. But deserves a longer discussion. Back to the Rambam. So the Rambam just delineated the eight steps, the eight levels of prohibitions. He's saying when it comes to prohibitions, we do know which way more than the others. Umina deirugaze, and from this setting up the steps, neida chomer avera vekaluta, we could know the severity or the leniency of an avera of a sin. Aval mitzvot aseh, but when it comes to the positive commandments, lo piresh sachar kol achat mehin mahu. The Torah doesn't explain what are the wages for each mitzvah. What are those wages lifnei Hashem before Hashem kedei sheneda ma mehem chamurot u ma mehem lemata mimena, so that we would be able to derive which are more severe and which are less. Ela tzivah lekayem davar ploni v'davar ploni, but rather God said perform this mitzvah and perform that mitzvah. Ve'lo hodia eze mehem yoter gadol lifnei Hashem, and God didn't tell us which He considers greater and which less. God just says perform. So you'll ask me, how big a mitzvah is it to give a guy a loan? I'll tell you, I don't know. It's a mitzvah. How big is it? He'll ask me, well, how big a mitzvah is it to say Shema every morning? We have a mitzvah to say Shema every morning and every night. I don't know. And how big a mitzvah is it that that I honor my parents, I call them up? So that we know, that's a weighty, weighty mitzvah. Mm-hmm. That's a very weighty mitzvah. So the Rambam says, most mitzvot, God didn't tell us their wages. We don't know which is greater. And here we could add, Chazal tells us the reason God didn't tell us is because God knew our nature. If we would know that for saying Shema every morning and every night we'd get a tremendous amount of wages compared to doing a different mitzvah, we'd all run after the mitzvah we'd get more wages for, and we'd leave the other ones. Look, you see, that's the way the world works. How many people try to be lawyers and doctors, and people look for things that give them more wages. It also makes sense. God said, no, I want you to perform all my mitzvot. You don't know what you're going to get in the world to come for the different mitzvot. Let's see when we get there. We'll get there, Bezat Hashem. Stay tuned. Let's see. We won't get there tonight. Bezat Hashem, we'll get there. That deserves its own discussion. What did Chazal mean when they said that statement? But we'll get there. It's later on. What? Yeah, yeah. It's a good question, but we'll get there, Bezat Hashem. Ulfichach, and therefore, Cho'uy lishtadel ben kulan. We should really work hard at performing all of them. V'alai soda ze amru. And based on this principle, our sages taught us, ha'osek v'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. If you're busy with one mitzvah, you don't have to rush to do a different mitzvah. Lelo avchana, God, the sages didn't discern ben ha'mitzvot shu'osek ba'la mitzvah uveret, between the mitzvah you're busy with and the other mitzvah. If you're busy, you're taking care of your father's Cadillac. Father says, do me a favor, wash it for me. You're washing it. You're doing kibbut avim. A poor man comes and says, I need to marry over my daughter, tomorrow's the wedding. You have to, sorry, I'm busy now. I'm busy. I'm doing a mitzvah. I can't stop. You're on your way to, let's say you're on your way to bring a poor man food for Yom Tov. You're traveling Chol HaMoed. You're going to bring a poor man food. So you could say, well, let me go find where there's a sukkah. I have to eat lunch. I haven't eaten yet today. You're supposed to eat on Chol HaMoed. You're not allowed to fast half a day. By noontime, you have to have eaten. Let me find a sukkah where I can sit down and eat breakfast. The Torah says, the Halach says, no, you're busy performing one mitzvah, you're osek b'mitzvah, you're patur min ha-mitzvah, you're patur from another mitzvah. So the Rambam says, really, we should ask, well, which mitzvah weighs more? So because of this principle, that we don't know the weight of different mitzvot, so we don't discern. We say, if you're busy with one mitzvah, you're patur from the other mitzvah. And here, there are two opinions. One opinion says, well, if it isn't too tough, if you can really work it out to do both, then do both. And the other opinion says, no, the second it's a little bit tough, you don't have to perform the other one. You could take off a half hour and find a sukkah and then go on your way, but you don't want to take off that half hour. You're busy doing a mitzvah now. So the Ran is of the opinion that the second it's a little bit toilsome to perform another mitzvah, you don't stop your mitzvah to perform the mitzvah. You don't have to stop the mitzvah. And that's how we paskin in Halacha. That osek mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah means the second it's a little bit of a toil. It doesn't have to be a Herculean effort. The second it's a little bit of an effort, you don't have to stop the mitzvah you're performing for another mitzvah. And we don't know the weight of different mitzvot, so therefore this applies to any mitzvah you're busy with, except for the learning Torah. Learning Torah is its own thing. Learning Torah, we say every word you say is another mitzvah. So every second you're finishing one mitzvah and starting another mitzvah. So you can never claim I'm busy with the mitzvah. You're not busy with a mitzvah. You're busy finishing one, starting the other. So wait a second. Don't start the next one. Go help the poor man. Don't start the next one. Go do the other mitzvah you're responsible to do. If there are mitzvah that we have to do, we have to stop our learning Torah to do them. Someone want to ask something? Yeah.
So the real question is, like, if you're are involved in the mitzvah with the Rabbanon, and your dad asked you, your father asked you to wash his car, wash his Cadillac, do you leave the mitzvah with the Rabbanon and go from the Rabbanon?
It's a good question. Let's leave it for question and answer, okay? It's a good question. Let's wait. Yeah.
You said that we should start learning Torah for mitzvot.
The truth is, it's mitzvot she'ifshasot le'dechrim. Mitzvot that other people aren't going to perform really. If there's a mitzvah, it has to get done. And if you won't do it, it won't get done, then you have to stop learning Torah to get that mitzvah done. Talmud Torah is more valuable than the other ones, and nonetheless, Halacha says you have to learn a living Torah. You have to learn a Torah that you will perform. He who learns and doesn't perform, his learning is worthless. He'd be better off not learning. And if we encounter a mitzvah that will not get done if we don't do it, and it has to get done, so then even though in essence the learning Torah is more valuable, but the learning Torah is only more valuable if it's a type of Torah that leads us to action. And so when the actions come up, we do have to perform. Even though the minute that I'm performing, in essence, that minute I'm getting less schar. There's no mitzvah that I could do that's going to weigh as much as learning Torah. But if I don't stop my Torah to perform mitzvot, then the Torah that I'm learning is off. So Chazal said, you have to stop for the performance of mitzvot, even though, technically, we know that learning Torah is the greatest mitzvah there is. You with me? It's a little bit complicated, but that's the concept. Okay, back to the Rambam. Ulefichach amru gam, and therefore our sages also said, en mavrin ala mitzvot. You don't pass over a mitzvah. Klomar, meaning im mizdamen lecha asiyat mitzvah, if a mitzvah came to you, al ta'avor me'alea v'tanichena. Don't pass up the mitzvah that came your way kedei lasot mitzvah achar, to go perform a different mitzvah. You're about to do mitzvah, so do that mitzvah. Don't pass this mitzvah and say, oh, I'll go do the other one. So why don't we say maybe the other one's more important? Because we don't know which mitzvah to say is more important. The rule is, when you encounter a mitzvah, perform it. Mitzvah ba'al yadchal tanichena. If you have a mitzvah, en ma'abrin la mitzvot. We don't pass over mitzvot when we can perform them. Yeah. You said a few things, and I'm not sure which one you mean to say. So could you just explain?
There are some mitzvahs that you need to be learned to understand how to do them correctly.
Okay.
And rather than do a mitzvah incorrectly and avoid a mitzvah that you know how to do, shouldn't you do them when they... Can't you just drop the or put down the lulav and etrog and go do whatever you know is correct? Like, you know exactly?
So there are many details to that question. Let's leave that for question and answer, because it will depend. Like lulav netog is a mitzvah that you must fulfill. There are other mitzvot that when you do it, you perform them, like wearing tzitzit. You'll say, should I wear a four-cornered garment if I don't know my tzitzit or kasher? No, don't. And we have to go into the different types of mitzvot. Depending on the mitzvah, that's what will define the answer. So really this deserves a broader discussion, which we can't do here, but we could do later tonight. And then Rebbe went on to say, do you guys mind if I turn on the fan? I think we'll probably have an easier time staying awake. And then Rebbe went on to say in our Mishnah, ואף על פי שלא נתבר ערך עדיפות מצווה לגבי אחרת, and even though we haven't been told the value, the preference of one mitzvah with regard to another one, הרי יש דרך הערכה, but there is a way of evaluating, והוא, and that is, שכל מצוות עשה שאתה מוצא, that any mitzvah עשה, any proactive commandment that you find, שחייב את העובר עליה חיוב חמור, that the Torah says, if you transgress this mitzvah, there's a weighty punishment, Teda, you should know shebikiyuma yesh shachar gadol, that in its performance there are great wages. Hamashal beze, for example, hineh mila. If one did not have a kosher circumcision, every Jew must have a kosher circumcision. If one did not have a kosher circumcision, every day of his life he's transgressing an iser karet. That means that we said the second highest level, or the fifth level, right? After all the death penalties that we execute in court, the highest level of punishment, meaning the highest level of transgression, is karet, being cut off from the world to come. It's even more weighty than mitam bidei shamayim. So the iser of mila, if one did not have a kosher bris, so then every day of his life he's transgressing that iser. So people sometimes don't know this. A guy is born and his parents aren't so religious, so they let the doctor in the hospital perform his bris mila when he's 3 days old. That's not a kosher bris. They let a doctor who's not Jewish perform bris mila. It's not a kosher bris. They let someone perform the bris mila at night time. That's not a kosher bris. And to fix it is a joke. I mean, whoever wants can come to me. I do it for free anytime by day. You can only do it by day. And it's a 1 second procedure which most people don't even feel. But if a person does it, then it's night time now. I usually do a few guys a week. I mean, because guys come to Machon Meir, what you have to do is really, you guys could really do it to yourself, but you have to know what you're doing. You're more likely to hurt yourself. What you really have to do is at the Fat Tambrit. You take any instrument really, and at the right place, you have to know where to do it. You really got to get one drop of blood, which really means just scratching the skin, just the scratch. I mean, it's less than a paper cut, and then touching it with a tissue. If the tissue has one drop of red blood on it, that's it. You did a tafat tamrit. It sounds scary, but it isn't. I've done it for people who didn't even.
Yeah, you do it all the time.
Yeah, but I can tell you, I do it all the time.
You said burning buildings. Would you do that? No, you wouldn't.
I didn't get that. But anyways, I can tell you that a lot of times I've done it and people didn't even know I did it yet. Like all you got to do is really get one drop. Okay, at any rate, bottom line, a person who had a non-kosher bris, his bris was performed by a non-Jew, his bris was performed before the eighth day, his bris was performed at night, or there could be other instances. If you're uncertain, then you should verify. So then every day he's in transgression of an iser kares. So that's one of the weighty mitzvot. The Korban Pesach, as we discussed earlier. Vishvita Bashvi, Shabbos. The Torah warns us throughout the Torah keeping Shabbos. Time and again. Vasiat Make, and the building of a fence, some kind of protection from falling off a roof. Kol elu mitzvot ase. All of these really are proactive commandments. Ela shechiyefta osem lachav Shabbat skila. But the Torah says, if you do work on Shabbos, you get skila. That's the weightiest level of a mitzvot ase. And whoever forgoes the mitzvah of a bris or the sacrifice at its set time, the punishment is karis. And someone who leaves a source of spilling blood, meaning he leaves something that's a hazard in his home, so that's biblically prohibited. That's what Torah says. Don't leave a source for spilling blood in your house. From here you can derive kischar shvita b'shabbat gadol meod yotom ischar mila. That the wages for Shabbos observance is very great, even greater than the wages for performing a mila. And the wages for a bris are greater than the wages of building a fence so that people don't fall off your roof. And that's why the Tana and our Mishnah said, calculate the loss of a mitzvah corresponding to its wages. Meaning, look at the loss. If I don't perform the mitzvah, if I lose it, what does the Torah say the punishment is? So then, I can say corresponding to that are its wages. The Rambam's explanation on the Mishnah, by the way, is unique. Other commentaries don't explain it this way. This is the Rambam's explanation. That on the one hand, Rebbe told us, be careful with a light mitzvah like a weighty mitzvah because you don't know their wages. And then the Rambam went on to say, but you want to know some of the wages? So some of the wages you could know by calculating how much, if you lose a mitzvah, how much the punishment is, you could calculate how much are the wages. And Rebbe went on to say, that you could derive the wages for an avera, for a sin, when you refrain from sinning. Really, the Torah never tells you what are your wages for not sinning. The Torah says, don't sin. What are your wages? The Torah doesn't say. But you could derive it from its punishment. otasher onisha oseh ota chamur, that the prohibition, that the punishment for that prohibition is severe, yiyeh schara poresh mimena lefi oto hayachas bechomer. The wages for he who sins, he who holds himself back from that sin, will be corresponding to its severity. Kmo shenitber bekiddushin, as was clarified in the Talmud in Kiddushin, v'omram, when our sages said, kol ha-yoshev v'lo avar avera, whoever sits and holds himself back, he does not transgress, notnim lo shachar ko'oseh mitzvah, they give him wages like performing a mitzvah, v'kvar be'anu shama, we've already explained it there. So this is a very important point. One might say, wait a second, the Torah says, he who lives with his sister gets karis. He who lives with his mother gets karis. He who lives with his daughter gets karis. I'm a good guy. I'm sitting here. I'm not doing any of those sins. How much wages must I get in the world to come? So the Rambam therefore explains. It means that he's holding himself back. He's in a situation where he might perform the sin. Torah tells us that one's own wife and the time that the couple are prohibited, so that's the same as his sister. It's a karis. It's an iser karis. One's own wife. So even though one might say, yeah, but my sister, I'm not interested. My wife, well, part of the month we're together, so when we're not, I'm more interested. So yeah, that time when he has to hold himself back, for that time he'll get great wages, because on that time he's really holding himself back. So we don't just say, well, if I'm sitting here and I'm not going outside and killing someone, well, it says you kill someone, you get the death penalty. Must be I'm supposed to get good wages for that. That's not the idea. The idea is, if a guy just came to my house, bashed up my new car, walked into my house, burnt down everything I own, and then came out and spit in my face, and I pick up a hatchet and I say, you bum, then I put down the hatchet. Ah, okay. So then I'll get wages for not having done something to him, because I held myself back from doing it. But it has to be a situation where I was going to do it and I held myself back. Umfurash b'Torah heyot ha'masim yeduim lefanav yitala kefi shu yoda otam amar misifrecha asher katavta. And the Torah really clarifies, the Torah says that really God knows everything we're doing, and we don't know God's knowledge. This is a concept that is beyond us, but we do know that God knows us. Why is this beyond us? The Rambam is concluding his explanation of the Mishnah with a philosophical point. You might say, God is going to give me wages for the mitzvot I perform, that means God knows what I'm doing. Well, a second ago I didn't do it, and now I did do it. If God was whole, and God is always whole, well, is he more whole now that I've performed the action, or less whole? Did he know it before I did it or not? So the Rambam says we cannot fully understand what it means, God's knowledge. Our knowledge is separate from ourselves. We sense with our senses, we synthesize in our mind, and then we know. God has a knowledge that is beyond externals, meaning God doesn't work with sensory input. It's not that he senses and then he knows. He and his knowledge are one. And how God knows what we do, so the Rambam says that is beyond our comprehension. That's what the Rambam writes in his introduction. We learned it a few months ago. But the Rambam says, nonetheless, this concept that God does know what we do, this is already in the beginning of the Torah, where the Torah says in the book of Shmos, Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, either forgive the Jewish people, or erase me from your book. So we see that God has a book where he records everything we do. So that's the concept that God has it. And that's what the Rambam is referring to, the conclusion of the Mishnah, mm-hmm. that all our actions are written in a book. This concept that there is this godly book where everything is written, that concept is already alluded to in the Torah, where Moshe Rabbeinu tells God, either forgive the Jewish people or erase me from your book. So we see there is this concept of a heavenly book. Let's just review the Mishnah the way the Rambam taught it. So the Rambam explained to us that when the Mishnah says, Rebbe teaches, what is the straight path that a person should choose? Rebbe is referring to that median path, the golden path. Kol shetivert lo se'a, a path that is glorious for the one who performs it. Ve'tivert lo min adam, and glorious to him among mankind. People look at him and see he's a balanced person. Ve'evei zahir, and then Rebbe went on to teach us that one should be careful. Ve'mitzvah kala ke'mitzvah hamura, when it comes to a light mitzvah like a heavy mitzvot. So the Rambam said this is a reference to mitzvot asei, not prohibitions, because by prohibitions we know their wages. But when it comes to mitzvot asei, shen ata yodea matan tzran shel mitzvot, you don't know the wages for the mitzvot. Ve'bim chashev efsen mitzvah keneged tzchara, but you could calculate the loss of a mitzvah will correspond to its wages. Look at what the Torah punishes for the loss of a mitzvah, and then you'll see corresponding to that will be the wages. Tzchara avera keneged hafsedan, you could derive the wages of an avera by corresponding it to what the Torah says is the price one pays if he loses by performing the avera. הסתכל בשושה דברים אין אתה בא לידי עברה. Take note of three things, you won't come to the hands of sin. דם על המעלה ממך, know what is above you. עין רואה ואוזן שומעת. An eye that sees, an ear that hears. וכל מעשיך בספר נכתבים, and all your actions are written in the book. So this corresponds to what we said initially, that we will be paid back for what we do. We don't know the wages, but at the end of the day, we have to remember that everything we are doing is being recorded, and there will be a payback time. Yeah. That's one understanding. The Rambam isn't going with that understanding. That it's the book of wages. It's the book of all of Moshe Rabbeinu's actions. When Moshe was saying that, he was saying, erase me from your book in which I am recorded. Take me off the records. Meaning, remove me from everything.
So God's got tons of
books. His reward for
the I think it means everything. Just erase me off the book. That's how I think the Rambam understands it, but I'm not sure.